The brewers of Hyde Park True Lager, the beer that's extra aged by Father Time, present Johnny Nevlet in a dramatic presentation of So the Story Goes.
Tonight, you'll hear the story of how a tiny incident changed the course of history. You'll also hear the story behind the writing of a fascinating tale that has captivated and charmed people all over the world.
The makers of Hyde Park Beer invite you to spend the next quarter hour with a well-known writer, narrator, and sports authority, Johnny Nevlet. And folks, before Johnny brings you some more of those strange but true stories, I'd like to remind you that if you want beer at its very best, ask for Hyde Park. Once you've tasted it, you'll know why so many old-time beer lovers prefer it. Because its smooth, mellow flavor comes not just from Hyde Park's years-old formula and aging, but from its extra aging. Yes, wise old Father Time extra ages Hyde Park to give it that grand extra flavor that means real beer enjoyment. Of course, there may be times nowadays when you find your dealer is low on Hyde Park, or he might even be out of it. If that happens, please remember two things. First, that such shortages are temporary. And second, to ask for Hyde Park again the next time. It's much too good to miss. Because whether you get Hyde Park bottled or on tap, you're sure of getting smooth, mellow enjoyment from every sip. Hyde Park is seldom equaled anywhere and never excelled. It's extra aged by Father Time for extra flavor. And now here's Johnny Nevlet, and So the Story Goes.
Have you ever stopped to think how the destiny of nations, yes, of the whole world, have been changed by little things? Where would Rome be today, for instance, if Cleopatra's nose had been one half inch shorter and Mark Antony had not fallen in love with her? Or if the wind had not changed when the Spanish Armada attacked England, destroying the great invasion fleet? Well, tonight I'd like to bring you a story about another such incident. An incident which could have been called insignificant, yet which changed the entire history of the world. On the morning of Friday, August 3rd, 1492, three ships left the harbor of Palos, Spain, upon the first voyage into the unknown Atlantic. The Pinta, the Niña, and the Santa Maria, under the command of the Admiral of the Western Sea, Christopher Columbus. But though everything appeared peaceful aboard the three ships as they set out, the quiet was a fraud, for the men, most of whom had been freed from jails for volunteering to sail into this unknown sea, were frightened. Yes, they thought of the terrible monsters which were reported to lurk in the depths of the sea, monsters which wrapped strangling coils about luckless ships and mariners, the prey which was drawn into the great serpent's mouth to be crushed and eaten. And so, though all seemed quiet, Christopher Columbus's men were keeping a sharp lookout for any unusual incidents. Yet nothing unusual occurred, and so they headed further and further out into the unknown Atlantic. Day after day went by, and a distressingly uncertain wind blew them far over the horizon, far beyond the furthest limits any man had gone, into the uncharted seas beyond. And then, on the 13th of September, the helmsman in the Santa Maria motioned to Columbus, bade him come near, and whispered in his ear,
"Don Admiral, I do not like to say this where the other men can hear us, but there are strange things afoot. Yes, there are things here which no man can explain. Behold, the needle of the magnetic compass."
Bending over the compass, Columbus saw what had frightened the helmsman. There, before his eyes, he saw the hitherto steadfast and unswerving compass needle spinning in its bowl, pointing not north, but to every corner of the globe. Columbus pledged his helmsman to silence. But how can you keep a secret when two other ships can observe the same phenomena? And so the secret was out, that the compasses, the incorruptible, the undeviating compasses, were wrong, and now no man could tell in which direction they sailed. This story might have died of its own inertia, but a few days later, a tremendous meteor plunged down out of the sky and exploded in the sea. The crew's fears were realized. Here was the evidence that heaven itself disapproved of this reckless venture. Here was the proof that if they continued, they were doomed. In a body, the men came to Columbus while the little fleet lowered its sails and the three ships clustered together. From the ranks of the men, a tall, villainous, black-browed sailor stepped before the admiral and began to speak.
Sir, we demand that you turn back. To go further is to court disaster and death. How can we go further when we know not even in which direction we sail? We shall sail on until we reach the end of the sea and fall off into purgatory beneath. We demand that you turn back.
Columbus looked about him into the surly faces which crowded about him, closer and closer, their faces growing blacker still. One wrong move, one wrong word would have turned them into beasts moving in for the kill and would have caused them to turn back, never to discover America. It was then the little incident occurred which changed the entire history of the world. For in that tense moment, a lookout shouted,
Sir Edward! Birds! Land birds!
Yes, a great flock of land birds was passing over the fleet. Birds whose tiny forms told even the most untutored mariner that land must be near. Columbus was quick to seize the opportunity. Quickly he pointed out that they were near the end of their quest. Yes, near to Cathay, it might be, if they would only give him a little more time. And so the men reconsidered, and the Pinta, the Nina, and the Santa Maria turned and followed the birds. A day later, land was sighted. Through the intervention of a few birds, America had been discovered. And so the story goes, this amazing but true story of how a tiny incident changed the course of history. For it is undoubtedly true, as Columbus himself tells us in his diary, that if the fortunate chance of the birds crossing their course in the midst of the great uncharted ocean had not occurred, the fleet would have turned back, and America would not have been discovered, at least not by Columbus. And perhaps not for centuries afterward. Yes, were it not for a few birds, you friends who listen to my broadcasts might never have existed in America. And the nation we love, the greatest nation on earth, might still today be an uncharted wasteland lying desolately between the Atlantic and the Pacific Oceans.
So if it weren't for the birds, Columbus might never have discovered America. That's a strange story, Johnny, and it shows how seemingly little things can affect great events, whether it's finding a continent or saving a life.
What do you mean by that, Charles?
Well, I mean, Johnny, that it's certainly a little thing to do, donating a pint of your blood to the blood bank. But it can mean a life saved, the life of some soldier or sailor, maybe your own boy or a neighbor's boy. Yes, many thousands of lives have already been saved by this modern miracle, blood plasma. But as the fighting gets tougher, the need for plasma grows greater. So won't you folks please think it over? And if you're healthy, see your local Red Cross chapter. In St. Louis, the Red Cross Blood Donor Service is at 1007 Olive Street. Call Chestnut 0915 for an appointment. If there is no blood donor station in your community, your local Red Cross chapter can tell you when and where you can donate. Remember, though, the need is now, so plan to give as soon as possible. Why not make it one of your New Year's resolutions? To give your blood to the Red Cross Blood Bank. And now, Hyde Park again brings you Johnny Neblett and his second story.
This is the story behind the story. The story behind the writing of a whimsical, fascinating tale that has captivated and charmed people all over the world. Many years ago, a shy young Oxford professor took three little girls out for a boat ride on the Thames River in England. He was a timid, retiring person, so self-conscious that he became confused and stammered when he tried to talk to grown-ups, but not with youngsters. No, he loved to tell nonsense stories to small children. As he rowed the small boat up and down the river that sunny afternoon, he amused his three small companions with a delightful tale he made up as he went along, himself not knowing what was to happen next. The three little girls, their curls bobbing in the breeze, forgot the boat, forgot the river and the beautiful green countryside, so captivated were they by the intriguing story. The young professor triumphantly brought the story to a close just as they docked the boat. And as they walked up the riverbank toward home, one of the little girls begged him to write the story, to put it down on paper for other youngsters to enjoy. So just for fun, he decided to see if he could put it down on paper. And during the days that followed, he spent every available moment working on it. At last, it was finished. And the shy young man, satisfied only that he'd finished what he started out to do, stored the manuscript in an old trunk and forgot about it. Years later, a friend of his, puttering about the attic, came across the manuscript, read it, and was so enthralled by it, he insisted that the professor send it to a publisher. The professor was shocked.
What? Are you suggesting that a professor of mathematics at Oxford University publish a nonsense story for children? Preposterous.
The friend begged and pleaded and wheedled, but the professor remained firm. Never would he permit his name to appear in such a connection. It was beneath his dignity. What would his colleagues on the Oxford faculty think? Why, he'd be laughed off the campus. Finally, the friend made a clever suggestion.
If it's just the use of your name that's bothering you, why not use another name, a pen name? Then no one need ever know you wrote the story. Come on, Charles, old chap, be a sport. You've nothing to lose. And I'll wager there are lots of children who'd love to read that story.
Reluctantly, the professor agreed to the publication of the manuscript on the one condition that it be published under an assumed name. When the volume appeared in England's bookshops, it was an immediate and tremendous success. The author was bewildered at the fame that so suddenly was his, the fame that descended on him overnight. That story, the book he was ashamed he had written, soon became one of the most famous books in all the world. And so the story goes, this amazing story behind a story. And who was that timid college professor? Well, his real name was Charles L. Dodson. But you and I know him by the pen name he assumed when he published that children's story. The pen name of Lewis Carroll. For that was the name he assumed when he finally allowed his friend to publish the story of Alice in Wonderland. Yes, the yarn he spun that afternoon in a rowboat on the Thames was the story of Alice and her amazing and wonderful adventures with the White Rabbit. But had it not been for the stubborn persistence of the shy professor's friend, Alice in Wonderland and its equally whimsical sequel, Through the Looking Glass, might now be just a dusty, yellowed manuscript lying forgotten in the bottom of a musty old trunk instead of one of the most famous children's stories ever written. Well, time's up for now, but we'll be back soon to tell you more of these true stories gleaned from the walks of life. Until then, this is Johnny Nebbitt reminding you to make your New Year's resolution sound like this. This New Year's, I'll buy a war bond to speed the day of victory.
You have just heard Johnny Nebbitt in another dramatic presentation of So the Story Goes. These quarter-hour visits with Johnny Nebbitt are presented for your enjoyment by the thousands of men and women who make and sell Hyde Park beer, the beer that's extra aged by Father Time for extra flavor. And now this is Charles Irving saying goodnight for the Hyde Park Breweries Association Incorporated of St. Louis, Missouri, makers of Hyde Park beer.